Now, what is your major malfunction, Mr. Falcone?
Oh, just a little matter of $100 million to collect and the fact that our Russian pal seemed to have dropped off the face of the earth.
The Russians were your department. Part of our deal for the rest of the money was for delivery of those Russian VX briefcases to the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla.
You changed the schedule by a full 2 days. 2 days from now is when I am supposed to contact the Russians. No sooner.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying, Major, when we land in Iran, I don't think the Ayatollah will just wire the rest of the money to our accounts and bid us a nice day.
So we sit tight for 2 days. Sample the Ayatollah's hospitality. Help the head shed and the Marines get settled into their new home.
While the entire might of the United States military and intelligence agencies are hunting for us. You don't think this bird can be spotted and tracked?
That's why my men are right now creating ghost ships for any spy eyes. It's another little marvel, courtesy of high-tech supercomputers. We go one way. Any military installations tracking us, find their screen showing us going in the opposite direction. Look, it will be at least 2 days before anybody discovers what happened at Camp Zero. Since part of the plan was radio silence with Washington, which I arranged through my contacts at the Pentagon. By then, the Russians deliver the VX packages. We get our money, everyone goes their separate ways. Passports, new identities.
You hope it goes down that way.
Mr. Falcone, we are in way too deep now to start fretting like a bunch of old hags over things that haven't happened yet.
The Iranians are fanatics, Major. I'm amazed they even bought into this scheme.
What do you mean?
I mean, what's to stop them from either taking us prisoner like the others or just killing us on the spot?
Me, Mr. Falcone. That's what would stop them. You want out?
What?
If you want out, I can go and open the door right now.
Are you threatening me, Major? This is my deal, too.
No threat. I merely asked a simple question.
When I want out, I'll let you know. 2 days. The Russians don't touch base, and I walk. We clear?
Oh, yeah. We're clear, all right.
With a cleaned, sutured, and sterilized but brutally punished face, Bolin found himself in the air with Benson at the helm of the Gulfstream. He settled the satlink on a table, sipped bottled water, fighting to keep it down. The soldier knew he would wear the war wounds from this one for some time to come, but it was far from over. The worst for somebody was waiting on the other end in Iran, and Bolin was hell-bent on winning the next round. Quickly, he dialed up Brignola. Allowing for the time difference, he tried the big fed at his suburban Virginia home, rousing Brignola from sleep.
Stryker, I was getting worried.
Your worries have only started.
Stryker, you all right? You don't sound so hot.
I sound about the way I look.
What gives?
Bolin gave the bitter and the short of it to Brignola, finally told him he was on his way to the American airbase at Incirlik. When he finished updating Brignola, he wasn't sure the big fed was still there.
What a mess.
Doesn't even begin to define it, Hal.
Bastards.
Doesn't even begin to define them, either. Now, this is what I want, and this is how I want to play it. Get a pen. Here's the laundry list of what I need.
Bolin spelled out the hardware he would need, wanted Brignola to get the farm on this ASAP, marshal up every resource he could to make it happen. He knew where they were headed, and Brignola knew all about Harin Salan. A satellite would be parked over the region within the hour.
You realize, Stryker, if this comes to public light...
No time to stew over this one, Hal. Get the man right away. Presidential directives for me across the board. I'm going in.
Other than a flying armada, you're going in alone, Stryker. We don't even know yet how many will be on the ground.
I started this alone. I might as well finish it alone.
Okay. I've got a lot of work to do and no time in which to do it. You get to Incirlik, call me. This guy Collins, he's the worst kind of rat bastard, Stryker. How this all happened, nail his ass.
Count on it. I'm thinking, Hal, he had a lot of help in some circles your way, or he couldn't have taken it this far.
We're on the same page. Problem is, Stryker, unless someone talks, we may never shine the light on all responsible parties.
I'm keeping the faith. I'll be in touch.
Be careful, Stryker.
Bolin slumped back in his seat, wincing against fresh waves of pain coursing through his body. He had some time on his hands before they landed, and he had no doubt Brignola would work his usual logistical sorcery. The rest, Bolin knew, was up to him.
They're here.
Bring them to me.
They insist on keeping their weapons. But of course. How many prisoners?
8. A paltry number considering how many of our own were lost.
Indeed. Take the prisoners to the quarters arranged. Have your own men stand guard. Do not unchain them. Do not feed or water them. We will treat them as the savages they are.
Salan understood why Kalk didn't like the idea of infidels roaming freely about the place, armed to the teeth. Westerners who had slaughtered many Muslims before their plane touched down on the runway. There were many things his men didn't understand these days, but they were paid to obey. They served his will, since his will was merely a divine instrument of God. Lately, he heard the rumors whispered behind his back that it was near blasphemy, borderline madness, for faithful servants of Islam to be in league with Western devils. And he caught the looks more frequently now whenever they entered the great hall, where he sat with his legs folded on top of the white marble table, listening to American rock and roll and drinking Coca-Cola, occasionally slipping some American movie into the video machine, one that was usually rife with sex and violence. Recently, after he had decided to go ahead and hold hands with the devil to further jihad, he had gathered his flock of disciples and gently attempted to explain that to defeat the enemy, they had to understand that enemy. Besides, they owed their Ayatollah certain indulgences. This was his palace, left to him by his father, one of the original oil magnates decades ago, when the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company was created. These days, Salan imported heroin from Afghanistan, refining drugs in the bowels of the palace that were then shipped to Lebanon, then to Europe and America. Let the infidels poison themselves. He didn't care. Their lust for drugs provided more cash than he could spend in 5 lifetimes, arming his troops and bringing the vision of acquiring weapons of mass destruction closer to reality by the day. He smiled, sipped his soda. If they thought him mad, so be it, since it was said madness and genius were kissing cousins. His palace, his music, his world. Soon it would be his show of defiance to the great Satan, interrogating the prisoners, filming for all the world their cowardice, evil, and treachery as he put them under the knife and skinned them alive. Soon, when he had the requisite hardware delivered by the infidels, part of the deal, America would know horror. The entire Muslim world had been under the boot heel of the great Satan for too long. Soon, he would crush his enemies, but not before he tried and executed the Americans who were now his prisoners.
They're going to want to know about their money. These jackals murdered many of our brothers in arms, Somali, Sudanese, Lebanese. They were still of Islam. You intend to play host to these devils?
I intend to perhaps give them just enough rope by which to hang themselves. The money is my concern, a mere grain of sand in the desert if it furthers our cause. Let us hear them out. They did as I had asked.
How can you possibly trust men who so blithely betray their own?
Who said I trusted them?
Collins didn't believe what he was seeing and hearing. Leading his men into a massive conference room with walls, domed ceiling, and table gleaming white marble, he tried to keep his expression neutral. He had heard about the eccentricities of Harin Salan, but this was more than he'd expected. He balked at the sights and sounds, Python and Falcone nearly walking up his back, Warlock throwing him a look, a sneer forming on his lips. Ayatollah Salan was a diminutive figure, 5 feet tops, with a white turban and white robe, with a flowing white beard and a snowy complexion. He sat at the head of the table, legs crossed. 10 men in black robes, wearing black hoods, stood at the conference table. The major found the black hoods a little unsettling, the burning eyes aimed their way, sizing all of them up, the assault rifles close at hand. The sooner Collins put Iran behind, the happier he'd be. But with the latest news about the Russians, 2 days could feel like an eternity, and might just become that if the Ivans didn't come through. He stole a look at stereo speakers that were 10 feet tall if they were a foot, vibrating teak pounding out the rock. Whatever his views on the Western world, the Ayatollah apparently liked his music. It figured, made a twisted sort of sense. Collins had yet to meet a fanatic who didn't talk out of both sides of his mouth. The strict tenets of their religion meant for the other guy, while those in charge partied like there was no tomorrow.
Gentlemen, be seated.
What?
Collins pointed at his ear. Slowly, a weird smile on his lips, Salan lifted his remote and lowered the din.
First, in keeping with our original deal, It is a mere courtesy on my part that you and your men are allowed to keep your weapons.
Let's get down to business. Mr. Falcone here says it will be 2 days before he can reach the Russians and arrange delivery of your merchandise.
Really?
We had some minor problems. One of our people in Bekaa knew a little more about the operation than he should have. I'm talking detailed records, naming names. It threw our whole schedule off. That's why we landed earlier than I wanted to.
That was not of my doing.
Whatever, we're talking 2 days.
Then it will be 2 days before you see the rest of your money.
We sort of figured as much.
The men that were left with you?
You will be reunited with your CIA comrades in a few minutes when my men take you to your quarters. I will have food and water sent to you. I do hope the Russians do not let you down. I would be gravely disappointed since you have already been paid the bulk of your money.
It'll happen.
See that it does. That will be all for now.
Collins rose, gripping his HK subgun, watched as Salon shut his eyes, smiling, and turned the volume back up.
House of the what?
Holy. House of the holy.
The executioner was in some of the most terrible physical pain he could recall enduring in some time, but he was feeling as angry and amped up as ever. He didn't have time to nurse wounds or dwell on the pain. The enemy had landed, and he was busy crunching numbers, laying out the final attack strategy. On a lightning presidential directive, Bolin had been granted full access to the American airbase in Incirlik, no questions. Colonel Stone was in charge, and he would get whatever he needed to chase down Collins. The intelligence and black ops wheels were churning, every piece of hardware the soldier needed scrambled and dropped off by the time he landed and turned Benson over to the CIA for interrogation. The executioner had claimed a private office adjacent to the special ops war room. Right then, an attack team, a combination CIA and Green Berets, was in the war room, nailing down the logistics to get Bolin launched. He was poring over every piece of pertinent intel, the skies over the Dasht-e-Lut desert region in southeastern Iran swarming with American reconnaissance aircraft. Along with recon photos, satpics were flying across his table at lightning speed, at least 4 satellites parked over the region, leaving no piece of rock or stretch of sand unmonitored. Bolin had a fighter squadron of F-15Es and a Spectre at his disposal, his own ride to the LZ, a C-141 Starlifter. At first, Brignola had told him, the president was so enraged over the treachery that he had balked at sending Bolin in alone. How Brignola convinced the man to cut him loose, Bolin wasn't sure, but it was happening. Figure one more deniable expendable if it went to hell on the ground in Iran, and the political powers in Wonderland could simply wash their hands of the whole fiasco and call it a rogue operation. It happened all too often.
The house that heroin money built.
It'll be the house of the damned by the time I'm through.
Amen to that, Stryker. According to the CIA and the DEA, Salon exports something in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 metric tons of heroin to the West every year.
Ironic, don't you think?
You mean in a country like Iran, where if you get caught with a marijuana joint, they'll march you out to the village square and lop your head off?
And all the mullahs just turn a blind eye to a major narcotics trafficker in their own backyard.
I imagine they get their cut, or tribute, to see no evil. Besides, we know drug money finances terrorism.
Bolin checked his watch. He needed to wrap it up with Brignola, engage his fighter pilots and Spectre crew in one last brief.
Okay, Hal. I want constant sad imagery of the House of the Damned shot to me as soon as you get it. The way it's shaping up from my first look, they've taken the head shed and the Marines to quarters at the far edge of the compound. I'm seeing Collins and snakes traipsing the grounds, all of them armed. It looks like they have their own quarters. The word I get here is that there are no servants, no women, no family members in the palace proper, which means I can bring the roof down, wade in, and blast away.
So you hope? Not that I doubt your ability, but you're talking 80-plus targets between Collins's and Salon's men.
That's why I'm bringing along the Spectre. And believe me, I've got one angry heart.
The man has given you 2 hours on the ground, Stryker. Remember that. If you don't nail it down by then...
You told me. They send in the special forces.
For now, it's your show.
Fear not, Hal.
Bring back the head of this Collins snake.
I'm not planning on leaving him that much.
Sounds like I can make book on that.
I'll be in touch when I'm in the air.
The executioner was so close to the enemy now, he thought he could damn near hear Collins chuckling. Javi Kalk no longer bothered to concern himself over the sanity of the great leader. The Ayatollah was either truly insane or he was blessed by God with an extraordinary vision for the future of Islam. He could perhaps even see the future, a great victory for all Muslims. The Ayatollah was leading the global jihad to glory, their enemies trampled underfoot like the serpents that they were. Kalk was merely a foot soldier in jihad after all, and left the bigger questions of madness or genius to the will of God. Time always sorted out the mystery and showed to the world at large what mortal men and great men of vision were really all about. He had a job to do right then, working with the demolition team to mine the length of the C-130. As he looked at the banks of computers and other high-tech wonder machines, he was stabbed by regret that such magnificent and ultra-sophisticated tracking and intelligence-gathering tools were destined to become scrap when the massive bird was blown apart. They could sorely use this equipment, and the infidels would teach them how to use it. Before, of course, they were killed. Again, he was in no position to question orders. His men found two more bodies of dead Marines stashed in the comm center, which would make four total for the bonfire that would be filmed outside. But it was the two Muslims, executed and left on the floorboards where they had been slaughtered, that drew his ire. It galled him that Ayatollah Salan had chosen a path that cost the lives of so many fine Muslim warriors. Revenge, though, was soon coming. Again, he decided not to question the wisdom or the sanity of his Ayatollah as his men dragged the bodies down the ramp into the lengthening shadows of dusk. Once he was down the ramp, he saw the main camera mounted on its tripod in the distance, the four corpses hauled, jouncing and bumping over broken ground for several hundred yards, then dumped on the ground. He saw them next, the armed infidel devils, climbing the rise of the hill near their quarters, looking his way, wondering. He hoped they enjoyed the show. Mentally, he reviewed the message as he stepped up before the camera, the statement written by the Ayatollah committed to memory.
Is it on?
Yes, Pavi.
Kalk waited until the bodies were settled behind him, an American flag draped over their corpses, then stared into the camera. He felt the smile harden his mouth line, aware how ominous he looked in his black hood, his assault rifle canted across his chest.
What the hell?
Collins topped the rise, wondering what was going on himself, following Python's stare toward the activity near and inside the Herc. The Cobra leader pulled up, followed his men, along with Falcone and his second-in-command, Cooper.
Fuck. I really didn't want to have to see this. Those are American Marines, after all.
So I'll find a vomit bag for you. Toughen the fuck up. This is the home stretch.
This isn't good, Collins.
Collins glanced toward the firing range, took in the sniper activity, then watched the scene on the plateau floor. They had set up to film. A black hood in front of the main camera, other hoods dousing the American flag over the bodies with gasoline. Then a pack of matches flared up and the fire was started. Two more fanatics toted video cams, one of them aimed toward the Herc.
I guess Al Jazeera will be getting a special delivery from the Ayatollah. Jihad on prime time, only I can't imagine they have any gals that look quite like what you see on CNN. I can't see their own version of Paula Zahn wrapped up in a chador.
You think this is funny, Collins?
Hardly. It will be damn painful if your Russian comrades don't come through.
And if they don't?
Then we blast our way out of this shithole country.
And do what? That's the rest of the demo team coming out of the Herc now.
What?
Shit. Yeah, that's right, Collins. They're getting ready to blow our ride clear across the border and dump it all over Iraq.
We've been sitting in that stone hovel for a week now. Shit in a hole, a few scraps of bread, and a bowl of water every day. Maybe you noticed how your Muslim cargo was whisked away to the palace? Right now, they're sipping tea and relaxing in a pool.
What he's saying is I somehow don't think we were ever meant to leave Iran. We're gonna end up having our nuts fed to us in front of a camera, just like the head shed and those Marines you brought to the Ayatollah.
Fuck them. If I have to, I'll kill them all my goddamn self and let Allah sort them out.
Touchdown from 10,000 feet up jarred Boland to the bone. The Starlifter had sailed in from the northwest, jamming whatever radar and surveillance works the enemy had. The weapons bin was off the ramp seconds ahead of Boland, opening up from the static line. Then he was on the ground, stripping off his chute pack. The new Beretta 93R with attached sound suppressor was out, scanning the ridgeline, but his infrared heat monitor turned up no sign of life in the general vicinity. If the situation on the screens of his flight crew changed, or SAT recon showed the prisoners had been moved to the palace, White Eagle One would patch through the comlink. The black cosmetics stung a little where his flesh had been stitched up, but it was no time to worry about pain. He moved, silent and swift, in a northwest vector, melting into the darkening shadows, GPS module in hand, the so-called House of the Holy 2.5 clicks beyond the rise and planted on the plateau. The transponder was painting him on the screens of his fighter jockeys, and he knew he was on their clock. 38 minutes and counting, to be exact, the soldier punched in the homing beacon for his weapons bin. 500 yards later, he found it and keyed it open. The executioner loaded himself down for war. The enemy didn't know it yet, but the House of the Holy was about to go up in flames.
We are the holy warriors of the global jihad.
Pavikalk paused, his senses swarmed by the sickly sweet stench of cooking flesh. He listened to the flames, staring into the camera, allowed the silence to linger a few more moments. This was his moment to shine.
Behind me are American Marines, evil instruments of the great Satan, who would further impose its will on all oppressed Muslim people the world over. The great Satan and its Zionist pawns will soon be unable to continue to rape the earth of its natural resources, force their will on the Muslim world, and carry on with their greed and their lust. They will know horror and great suffering and sorrow for their sins. In the name of God, who is all-powerful and all-wise, we are issuing a global fatwa to our brother Muslim freedom fighters to kill infidels around the world. Wherever an infidel is found, the infidel must die. These Marines came to my humble country to murder Muslims, and their fate is now the fires of hell, as you see behind me. In the days to come, the infidels will taste the terrible scourge of the wrath of Islam for all the atrocities they have committed against Muslims. America will perish soon in fire, and their Zionist bootlickers will be annihilated in the weeks to come. America and Israel and their demonic allies will soon cease to exist. Your judgment is at hand. Allah Akbar!
Dagula felt the air of rising anticipation mingled with anxiety as the Ayatollah stepped into the large parlor room. They had just finished praying, lifting themselves off their mats now, facing the massive opening as one force, where the small Iranian stood, barefoot and running a curious look over the group. The Sudanese colonel, Ayid or something or other, faced the Ayatollah.
This is what your emissaries promised us as the big event? Captured by American commandos? My compound razed? My soldiers massacred? Do you know how many of us have died in the interest of your big event? Are you aware that they executed Muslims on the plane and before our eyes? That the Americans you appear to be in league with displayed hatred towards all of us? Would murder any of us without blinking an eye?
Dagula screwed up his own courage to ask the question that weighed most heavily on his own mind.
Are we your guests or your prisoners?
An inscrutable smile framed the bearded face.
Both. Neither. And I am aware of everything that has transpired. You have had an arduous journey, I grant you. You have kept the faith of Islam, and God will reward you for your faithfulness. You will be fed well. You will be my guests here. I suggest you rest, for the times ahead will be perilous. There is much work to do, a jihad to win. Should you wish to remain and join the ranks of global jihad, that is your choice. If not, I will return you to your country of origin.
Dagula wasn't sure he cared much for the sound of those last words. He was certain they were being issued an ultimatum. Over the years, he had heard a lot about this Ayatollah, a reclusive and mysterious figure who sold heroin to finance his empire. He had never once even seen a picture, even heard a description of the spiritual leader. Now he found himself somewhat amazed how the small Iranian, who looked more Western than Muslim, could wield such power, send out men who would so willingly go to their deaths for him. Habir Dagula found himself craving to return to Somalia. Whatever madness went on under this roof, he wanted no part of it. He wanted to go home. He was wondering how he might broach the subject of return to Somalia, about to step up when a terrorist in a black hood materialized beside the Ayatollah, whispering in his ear. The snow-white complexion seemed to darken with rage.
I will return.
Collins watched in horror as the C-130 belched apart in thunder and flames. Stem to stern, something like close to $1 billion worth of America's most highly advanced radar, tracking, SAT interceptors, and deception relay gone. Blown all over the desert, vanishing in a cloud of fire.
Is there any doubt now, Major, what the future holds for us?
A terrible rage boiled up in Collins as he watched the contingent of black-hooded fanatics marching away from the Holocaust. Some bastard still filming the destruction for Al Jazeera or whoever.
That's it.
It was far from over. They still had 900 million, already electronically dispersed around the globe in various numbered accounts. The Russians were on their own. Hell, everybody was on their own. He, his men, had come too far, killed too many, risked too much to stand on the sidelines and watch it all go up in fire and smoke.
All of you with me. Time to go have a few choice words with the Ayatollah.
Are you nuts, Collins? We're outnumbered 7-8 or more to 1, if you're thinking of fighting your way out of here.
Show some balls. If you want to stay here, I'll make sure those of us who do the killing and maybe the bleeding end walk out of here in one piece, help themselves to a slice of your pie.
Collins wheeled, marching down the incline, the domed mosque and series of minarets rising from the palace, little more than blurs in the tunnel vision of red rage. It took a few moments, adrenaline pumping so hard he wasn't sure what he saw. Then he spotted the contingent of terrorists in their black hoods moving their way, another 5 or so stepping away from the walled courtyard.
The great leader wants to speak with you. There is news. I'm afraid it is not good.
Yeah, well, I want to talk to his turban holiness.
Collins looked skyward, hearing the distant but rapidly growing scream of fighter jets, then spotted the black shapes of warbirds streaking in, missiles already flaming. The Cobra leader watched the terrorists turn toward the first series of eruptions, briefly wondered what bad news they'd been bringing.
All bets are off, I guess. What's another 100 million anyway?
They were as brazen and willful an evil lot as the executioner could recall coming across in either recent or distant memory. And they had only just begun to pay the price. Bolin was racing against the clock, under 60 ticks. New Dragon Squad was en route and ready to cut loose to bring down the roof on the House of the Holy. When the C-130 blew up across the plateau, it signaled the beginning of the end for the damned on two fronts. The soldier was moving out and down a rocky incline, guided by firelight and cutting a wide berth on the 6 of the hard force in black hoods when the fireball lit up the night with all the sudden, swollen, and blinding force of the sun exploding. Moments earlier, he had spied the group of maybe 12 or 13 on the distant northern rise, arms flapping, mouths working overtime, guys bent out of shape over the devil only knew what. Bolin had been tempted to take a peek through his infrared binocs. Then the dazzling umbrella of firelight clearly illuminated the unmistakable angry face of Collins. Warlock, Cyclops, and the survivors of Cobra Force were embroiled in a serious discussion among themselves, then turned their anger on a contingent of black hoods marching their way. 22 pounds of firepower in his hands and leading his charge into the night, 200 rounds of 5.56 millimeter full metal jackets good to go in the squad automatic weapon, and the executioner was beelining a straight north vector for the prisoner quarters. First to get the prisoners freed and moving, Rescue 1 in the form of an oversized high-tech Gulfstream 3 built to NSA specs, 5 minutes and counting to touchdown to the west. Then the gloves were off. 2 more box mags clipped to his webbing for the saw, an M16-M203 combo hung from one shoulder and a multi-round projectile launcher with 12 40-millimeter frag bombs down the chutes. Couple that with his standard sidearms, another ring of 40-millimeter hell bombs in the instant-release ring clip, a dozen hand grenades in an assortment of flash stun, incendiary, and fragmentation. If it proved to be not enough, he knew he was in a world of hurt. The first leg might go off without a hitch, hitting the south side of the prisoner quarters, the enemy none the wiser to his near-invisible advance on the rear. The Black Hoods, who had blown the Herc, were jogging up the blind side of Cobra Force when something snapped inside Collins and all hell broke loose in that direction. The savages on both sides went at it. If nothing else, Bolin figured they would shave the odds in his favor by flinging themselves into a mindless wild bunch routine. The executioner was carrying a heavy load of killing power, but figured the only way to lighten his burden was to start using up ammo. With plenty of targets, that shouldn't be much of a problem. The air assault was so orchestrated, so lightning quick and outrageous, meant to vaporize, eviscerate, and blow away so many of them on the ground and in the palace right out of the gate, that it struck Collins as a page torn right out of his own bloody manual. He was so pumped up on fury and adrenaline, he almost laughed. Their own side had found them, and now was hitting the palace with everything they had. Flaming steel arrows of doom rained from the sky and detonated on the roof, minarets disappearing under the barrage. Not his problem. Let the Muslim bastards inside the palace burn or get buried beneath the roof. There would be fewer fanatics he'd have to kill on the way out. Where there was grim will, there would be a way out. No way he was dying now, when his own cut of that 900 mil was growing by the second. He saw the huge dome of the mosque that rose from the palace lost in a cloud of white fire that dazzled his eyes. He looked away, aware if he was blind for even a split second he was finished. He might just be dead in the next few moments anyway. He felt hot sickness spatter his face, tasted the coppery taint spraying his mouth as he bared his teeth. He glimpsed blood spurting from the shattered skulls of Falcone and Cooper, too slow on the draw to tackle this onslaught of bullets being flung their way.
Get the prisoner!
Bolin opted to go with the sound-suppressed Beretta 93R, set down the saw, then crouched at the edge of the stone hovel where the Marines and Headshed were detained. Both warring factions were still grinding away with blazing weapons, shadows spinning and falling up the gently sloping incline. The yammering of the saw might alert his adversaries to his presence, and he wasn't quite ready to announce himself. Three black hoods came running out the front door, AK-74s up and aimed toward the pitched battle along and beyond the rise. Bolin grabbed the saw by the handle, stole a glance at the warring savages, found them too swept up in their own murderous fury to be aware of the newcomer. He closed in on the doorway, light spilling through the opening.
Stay still! Stay back or I'll shoot you!
Bolin searched the body quickly and found the keys.
Move out!
Bolin read the snarls and angry eyes for what they were. Marines who wanted to be uncuffed and armed so they could get into the fight.
Move it out, now!
Uncuff us! Hurry up! Get us out of here!
Yeah, I want a piece of these bastards!
Bolin looked into the surging mass of prisoners shuffling in leg irons, picking out the Marine general whose face he'd committed to memory back at Inserling.
Everdeen, get them under control. Out the door, to your 3 o'clock, down the back and to the airfield. Your ride is landing now. Go!
Harin Salan was simmering with grave doubts and gnawing fear as he waited for Pavi Kalk to bring the infidels to him. He managed to keep up the calm and commanding appearance of the spiritual leader of global jihad, but the news he'd just received was coursing waves of anger and even panic through his body. They had just received word from their own sources that General Gurgis had been arrested by a joint FSK-American-FBI team as he was heading for his plane with his cache of VX briefcases. Was this the end of the dream of global jihad? Or was this merely a test of his faith, resolve, and courage? It was time to light a fire, figuratively and literally, under the feet of the infidels. They would be disarmed first, the order given to shoot two of them if they resisted. With the numbers of fighters he sent to swarm them, the infidels, both greedy and perhaps intimidated that they were on foreign soil, would discover there was no way out, no hope but to cooperate. He balked at the sound and turned, his men freezing behind him. Bolin waited until the last of the prisoners was around the corner, then unleashed the saw. Holding back on the trigger, the executioner moved out and up, sweeping the saw back and forth, black-hooded fanatics flying away under the terrible driving force of the lead hailstorm. Warlock topped the rise. He cut loose, but he found the shattered remnants of fanatics being blown away right before his eyes. He figured a full-blown assault by at least a platoon of American Special Forces was underway. As he moved into the shimmering fire glow along the ridgeline, he presumed the prisoners were already freed. Still, he had to try. He had to know for certain. The way it was shaping up, none of them would leave Iran alive anyway. No way in hell would he just lay down his arms to be snapped up by a bunch of pissed-off American commandos and dumped in a cell for the rest of his life.
Better to die a lion than live a sheep.
With Cyclops on his 3 o'clock, Warlock eased off the trigger, searching his flanks.
No fucking way! What are you...
Warlock swiveled his head toward Cyclops, his comrade drawing target acquisition, but whatever he saw had stymied his reflexes. Warlock felt his heart lurch, bent on spraying and praying as he topped the rise. He expected to find a couple dozen commandos, hit the trigger, and shoot where Cyclops had fired. But there was nothing ahead except a shimmying veil of firelight. It was nearly laughable. Cyclops gunned down by... what? A ghost?
Looking for me, Warlock?
Warlock felt his lips stretch in a taut grin, even though he felt his heart leap into his mouth. He was turning toward the familiar voice of the ghost that had cut down Cyclops, but his gut warned him he was way too late.
Stryker to White Eagle Leader.
Bolin was up and over the rise, saw leading the way as he spotted five armed shadows barreling for the wall that ran the length of a courtyard, and the executioner had a good notion of who was on the run. The House of the Holy was engulfed in flames, but Bolin wanted to make sure nothing walked out of the fire and rubble. He didn't need to see the Ayatollah go down for the count, figured he was now most certainly cooked meat. The fighter jets had unloaded warheads packed with enough thermite to set fire to a couple of city blocks. Whatever they didn't get, the Spectre would take out with one last grinding strafe. Right then, Bolin still had mop-up of his own to take care of.
White Eagle here, Stryker. What do you have?
Give me another hard run of the Holy House. Raise Dragon Ship, but have my Spectre give me 15 minutes to sweep the perimeter for stragglers.
Aye, aye, Stryker.
The Executioner gauged the range to his fleeing snakes, unslung the multi-round projectile launcher, and settled down on one knee. The heat from the fire roaring from the ruins of the palace was so intense it wanted to suck the air from Collins's lungs. He figured there was no choice but to sweat it out, head for the area reserved for terror training. A vehicle or two should still be intact there, and he thought there was a helipad out back. With Python, Mamba, and Diamondback on his heels, Collins wanted to believe the worst was over, that they would make it out of Iran. They were being chased, that much he knew, having seen Cyclops and Warlock shot down near the top of the ridgeline. Whatever cropped up in their path, Muslim terrorist or American commando, it was history. He hugged the wall, moving swiftly ahead, the bitter stench of toasted flesh inside the ruins swelling his senses with nausea. He was almost afraid to look back, discover just how many commandos were gunning for them, but chanced it. He turned toward the slaughter ground up the hill, spied the lone shadow crouched in a kneeling position.
What the fuck?
Collins heard the next wave of missiles screaming more fireballs through the ruins, making sure any live ones still writhing around in that mess were nailed for good. Hell, he would have done the same, but he didn't much care for being on the receiving end of this shellacking from above. Collins figured out next what the lone figure was wielding in his hands. He was up, grabbing the top of the wall to throw himself over and to cover, then realized he was too late. The blast hurled Collins into the wall, pinning him there for a moment like some bug under a microscope. He dropped to the ground. He saw the world shimmy in the thundering racket of the air assault. He nearly succumbed to darkness, but sensed the lone shadow on the move and knew he needed to find his weapon. Bolin slowed his pace as he advanced on the sprawled bodies. He held back until the last of the fighter jets had streaked on, then waded into the carnage. The 40mm warhead had impacted near the head of the pack, sent them flying in all directions. He spotted three bodies, recognized Python and Mamba. Collins was coming around.
It's me, Major.
Stone.
It's over, Collins.
Look, Stone. There's a lot of money. 10 million. You let me walk away.
The sweep took all of 6 minutes. There was no way, he knew, anything could walk out of the inferno he was now putting behind him. It was all Bolin could do to retrace his path, stay on his feet. He didn't give Collins or the others a glance as he moved past them. He was putting distance between himself and the House of the Damned when the Spectre dropped from the sky to mop up. Bolin felt the plane's motion change and fought his way back to consciousness behind closed eyes. Gradually, it came back, the mission from A to Ugly Z. He reckoned they had landed at Andrews Air Force Base, but for some reason, he wasn't sure of his surroundings, owed the fog to exhaustion, dehydration, the pulsing inside his skull. He recalled he had gotten a pass, thanks to Brignola, for any lengthy debrief at Incirlik. Beyond that, everything was a blur.
Colonel Stone, are you okay?
He pried open his eyes and focused on the black-suited co-pilot standing over him.
You're home, Colonel.
Home.
Bolin rose slowly from his seat and moved slowly toward the hatch.
You need some help, Colonel?
I'll manage.
As Bolin stepped past him, he wasn't sure if that was compassion or curiosity on the pilot's face. The executioner squinted at the harsh sunlight stabbing through the Gulfstream's hatch. One slow step at a time, he moved down the ladder ramp, spotted Hal Brignola waiting at the bottom. He faced his old friend, too damn tired and hurting to speak, too drained to the core of his soul over the evil he had seen and survived. He was grateful Brignola didn't make a point of scrutinizing his battered face.
You eat anything lately, Stryker? I can't remember. But right now I feel like a couple of cold beers, then take me to the farm. I feel like I could sleep for days. Understood. If you like, I could wake up the chef, keep you company over a little chow. I don't know, Hal. For right now, I'd rather be alone. This one was tough. I wasn't sure I was going to make it. I had doubts. You're only human, Stryker, and I often worry about that myself. But we're always glad when you come home.
Mac Bolin, Predator Paradise is a graphic audio production. Mac Bolin is a trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2004, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Christopher Grayville, Casey Jones, Tim Carlin, Thomas Penny, James Lewis, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, and Mort Shelby. Additional redshirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Dialogue editing by Brian Patton and Brian Rogers. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton, Temeskin Wubna, and Brian Rogers. The Mac Bolin theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Matt Webb. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Mac Bolin, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Stony Man and The Executioner. Available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Eagles number 10, Revenge of Eagles. When Falcon McAllister buys a silver mine in the Arizona Territory from his old friend Doc Holliday, he gets more than he bargained for. On the way to inspect the mine, Falcon's stagecoach is robbed and two passengers are killed. One of those passengers is Yaakos Gan, the daughter of Apache Chief Kitano. It falls to Falcon to deliver the Indian princess's body back to her tribe.
Kitano, I must tell you that if you take up the path of war, this time the white man will not stop. His soldiers will kill all of you, not just the warriors, but the women and children as well. Your numbers are small now. When the war is finished, there'll be no Apache left.
I think there is a way to not have war, if you will help. We want you to find the men who killed Yaakos Gan, and kill them.
Well, that I will do with pleasure.
There is something else. When you kill these men, we want you to take their scalps and bring them to us, so that we may see that you have done as you said.
So begins Falcon's quest to avenge the death of Yaakos Gan by bringing down Fargo Ford and his outlaw gang.
You're Falcon McAllister, eh? I thought we killed you.
You thought wrong.
What are you doing here now?
I thought I might have a drink. Spend a little time with a woman. That woman.
Uh-uh. Better pick yourself another one. This one's coming back up with me.
I don't think she wants to do that. And I don't want her to do it either.
What the hell do I care what she wants? She's got no choice. Neither do you, mister. I got my gun in my hand.
Oh yeah, I see the gun. But what are you gonna do with it?
What do you mean, what am I gonna do with it?
Well, here's the thing. You're pointing that gun at a girl. She's not your problem now. I am. If you move it toward me, I'm gonna kill you. If you shoot her, I'm gonna kill you. If you so much as twitch, I'm gonna kill you. In fact, the only way you're gonna get out of this alive is to drop your gun right now.
You're fucking crazy. Your gun's still in your holster. And if you don't get out of here right now, I'm gonna kill this girl.
Prove it.
Add to this lethal mix a band of Apache renegades who decide to take the matter of revenge into their own hands, and you've got a recipe for blazing six-gun action. Don't miss this classic tale of death and vengeance in the Old West, Revenge of Eagles.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.